Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at Hotep, to everyone. Welcome to another edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And let me tell you, whoa, that is not only what we're talking about, that's what we're making happen. Welcome again to this edition of New Day. This is, of course, Women's History Month 2024. Well, we say we're not only observing, commemorating, embracing the history of our women, but also we're making more history, black history, black women's history today, and make it certain that the future for our women and girls in particular and our people in general is not only able to advance, but to be sustained. So this week, we are going to have some very interesting conversations starting tonight. Now, we actually started a couple of days ago, but we're going to really get down with it now. And that means to have dialogue with the intention of there being solutions. No, we don't have all the answers, and we're not trying to, but we think we do have some to lend to the process, and we also know that when black women put their mind to doing something, 9 times out of 10, it's not only going to get done, it's going to get done in such a way that it's almost unbelievable, such as the Million Woman March of 1997. It was unbelievable. The system didn't expect it. Our people didn't even expect it, but it turned out to be an incredible endeavor that was very successful, and now we move to the next level. So again, we want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. We're going to get prepared to get ready for some real dialogue, that Speak Truth to Power dialogue, and again, we're going to be asking some very interesting questions. Why are or is the black woman the most disrespected entity in America? Again, I didn't say this while I'm saying it, but Brother Malcolm X said it. So why would he say that? We're going to also ask some questions in terms of, are black women really representing in the manner that our ancestors would want us to? And are we really exemplifying that greatness? Are we really doing what we need to do today? Well, we're going to dive into some of those questions, and not because we're trying to just criticize or whatever. We're not here to do that. But what we are here to do is to speak truth to power, and with that come up with some real clarity, with some real solutions. Today, I was able to be a part of a radio program with a sister who was out of London, another sister who was from Chicago area, and I just found it almost amazing that, interestingly enough, some of the questions that was raised was almost shocking. For example, as we were having dialogue, I was mentioning how it was important for us to focus on raising up the mother of civilization. And again, if we're going to do something different in order to obtain justice and liberation, certainly we need to be interjecting some different things. And so the idea of raising up the mother of civilization was that kind of idea and concept. So one of the sisters mentioned, and again, I did elaborate on what that meant in terms of not just my feelings about being the mother of civilization, but the historical facts of it, including from a biological, archaeological, etc., the findings, the oldest remains, etc., of course, was of a highly melanated, and note, not just melanated, because all folks had melanin, so you have to be very specific. At any rate, the sister that was on the call with us, her answer or her response to all I was saying about we being, meaning the black woman, is the mother of civilization. That's what we represent. That's what we are. That's who we are. The sister said, well, what does it have to do with today? And even if we did think that before, or even if that was true before, how is that kind of, you know, well, I mean, what does that mean for us today? What, how does that have any value for us today? I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty much what she said. So I have to now ask our women, what are we thinking about and talking about in this mix? So before we go into an open mic tonight, and again, brothers, you are also definitely invited to participate because as black men, we value your opinion. But again, this week is really geared to help our sisters know thyself, love thyself, heal thyself, defend thyself. But before we go any further, again, with this being Women's History Month, and we're going to have a whole other conversation about that very shortly as well. But let's just take a few moments to check this out.
Henrietta Wood was born on the border of slavery near the Ohio River sometime between...
Oh, hold on a minute. I'm having a little problem with my...
Power on.
Okay, let's try that again.
Mode. Device paired. Henrietta Wood was born on the border of slavery near the Ohio River sometime between 1818 and 1820. Her early years were spent in Towseytown, a small river settlement in Boone County, Kentucky, named for Moses Towsey, who held Henrietta and her family in bondage. When Towsey died in 1834, Henrietta was separated from all she had known when sold to a Louisville merchant for $700. This sale soon led to another, and Henrietta found herself on a riverboat out of Battery, the property of a Frenchman named William Serode. When financial problems caused the breakup of the power...
Oops, hold on a minute.
...family several years later... William left for France, and his wife, Jane, returned to Louisville with Henrietta. Jane soon moved them across the river to Cincinnati to open a boarding house.
So the laws of the state of Ohio at that time required that any black man or woman who came into the state had to register as free before they could be employed. And that's exactly what Jane Serode did. She took Henrietta Wood down to the Hamilton County Courthouse and registered her as a free person, handing her freedom papers for the first time in her life. I think it's telling that later in her life, Henrietta Wood looked back on her years as a free woman in Cincinnati and described them as a sweet taste of liberty.
The Serode children felt Henrietta's emancipation cheated them out of their inheritance. So they devised a plan to legally reclaim what they considered their property. In 1853, they paid Henrietta's employer, Rebecca Boyd, to trick Henrietta into traveling with her across the river to Covington. Once in Kentucky, Henrietta was turned over to Zebulon Ward, a deputy sheriff who defied the law protecting Henrietta's right to freedom.
I think it's clear that the kidnappers knew what they were doing. They knew that Henrietta Woods was a free woman, and in fact, they located her freedom papers, the copy that she had been given by James Serode, and confiscated those as well. She was taken to an inn in Florence, Kentucky, the first stop after this kidnapping, and she talked to an innkeeper there about the fact that she was a free woman and that her freedom had been stolen away from her, and that set off a whole chain of events that resulted in a lawsuit being filed in Lexington, Kentucky, attempting to prove that the story was true, that she was a free woman.
Even with the help of the innkeeper, Henrietta's freedom was denied. After briefly being held in Ward's custody, Henrietta was sold to notorious slave trader William Pullum, whose firm trafficked thousands of enslaved people at Forks in the Road, a large slave market in Natchez, Mississippi. In an 1876 interview with the Cincinnati Commercial, Henrietta discussed the move, saying, "They said that Ward had told them to get me out on a plantation and not to sell me to anyone in town because I'd raise another suit in the courts. So they sold me to an old cotton planter named Gerard Brandon for $1,050. Soon after her arrival at Brandon Hall, Henrietta gave birth to a son, Arthur Sims. His presence perhaps restored hope during this dark time. In 1863, the Emancipation Proclamation led many slaveholders to move west, including the Brandons, who fled to Texas to retain their enslaved people, including Henrietta and Arthur. When the Brandons returned to their Mississippi plantation, Henrietta and her son also came, working there several years.
Years after the Civil War, she returned to Cincinnati, and she was able, with the help of a lawyer there, to file a lawsuit against Zebulon Ward, the man who had kidnapped her so many years before. And after a long period of litigation, she won this lawsuit in 1878 and received from the court $2,500, both in lost wages and damages for her long ordeal as well. Even though in some ways $2,500 was not what she had asked for from the court and certainly wasn't, I think, a sufficient restitution for all that she had suffered, it was nonetheless a significant amount, and it made a big difference for Arthur and his family in the years that followed.
Sometime before 1880, Henrietta and Arthur moved to Chicago, and the money awarded to Henrietta allowed them to settle comfortably in their new city.
Because Arthur was able to get a law degree and purchase a house, that wealth became the foundation for his descendants, his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, to pursue a lot of different careers, ranging from doctors and librarians to jazz musicians, a Tuskegee airman. Well, one of the things I think her story shows is that the current conversation about reparations has a long history and deep roots in the nation's history. You know, Henrietta Wood was one of a long tradition of African-American women who articulated the demand for reparations. Her story really speaks to a person who would not back down, but pursued justice for herself and her family to the fullest extent of the law.
Henrietta died at the age of 94, leaving a solid foundation and a legacy of resilience.
All right, family, right there. Now, here we are talking about, of course, Women's History Month, but we have to ask, how many folks really knew anything about Henrietta Wood? When we talk about reparations, why is this not a name that we are very familiar with? Here is a black woman who literally filed in court in the late 1800s and won. I'm confused. Well, not really, because people who kind of, you know about these things, why is this information that has not really trickled down to us as a people, particularly in our communities, particularly now as reparations is almost like, you know, this new, but not just buzzword, but it's almost like a new invention or something that's happening all over the country. But again, I'm going to open the mic up for you all and ask, how many folks knew about Henrietta Wood? Oh, and by the way, there's also another one or a couple more. But the question again is, Henrietta Wood, anyone familiar? Okay, we're going to go to our blog.
How about that? Where is your mom?
Uh-oh. We're going to go to our blog. Hold on one moment. Let me turn that off. Okay. Caller, you are at, 9840. 9840, thank you for joining us for this segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
Thank you, sister. Living on the front line. I'm not familiar with Henrietta Woods, despite I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and Covington is right there across the water, across the bridge right there in Kentucky. So I'm not familiar with her. But what I am familiar with is that we're in a terrible time, because this is a sidebar from Henrietta Woods, because I think it's most important that I say this to the family. Okay, if the orange agent is a racist, and all of America is voting for him, what did I say about where we're at as a people? As for where are we at? We're worse than apartheid in South Africa. This is worse than apartheid. And if he gets in there again, we're going to be in some terrible times. We need to plan and prepare for Agent Orange, because he has some plans for we as a people. And I don't hear anything being talked about that part, the planning for the future of we as a people. We need to organize now, not January or February, whenever it is, November 5th, whatever it is, for then, because it'll be too late then. So I'm just bringing this to the conscience of the family. We're in some terrible times. Okay, I just want to just say that, sister. Love you, God bless you, got us, and keep on keeping on. And on the move still, and living on the front line, one love. And thank you for allowing me the space.
Ashe, thank you, my brother.
Ashe.
All right. Ashe. All right, family. So, again, we raised the question, what about Henrietta Lacks? Henrietta Lacks. That's all another Henrietta that we need to talk more about, given the fact that they stole herself. But again, how many knew? Who knew about this great black woman who definitely made a serious contribution when it comes to the issue of reparations? Okay, let's see if there's anyone else. If you're in the Zoom family, if you want to just signal by raising your hand, I'll come to you. And, of course, on the blog, if there's someone there, if you would like to respond to this question, you can now also press 1. In the meantime, since it doesn't seem like anyone has a response to that, and I guess, and believe me, I understand it, but this points out again what I started off with Brother Malcolm, which is, why are we saying that the black woman is the most disrespected entity in America? And so we have to now raise this issue. I'm going to go to Sister Janae to see what your response is or comment is. This is an open mic tonight, family, because we want to start getting to the nitty-gritty of what do black women need to do now to not only raise us up and to move forward, but also to heal, also to take our rightful places. What do we need to do to do that? Now, this week we're going to be talking about black women codes of conduct. We're going to be talking about what we think a black woman is or should be, and how are we planning to help that to evolve. So Sister Janae, what are your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. Oh, my goodness. Black women need to atone. We need to get some atonism. We need peace with ourselves. We need to be real with ourselves. We need to heal. We need to get back to our self. We need to know thyself. We have got to get some healing for our soul. our minds and our bodies. We are ladies. Because it's so hard for us to fake it till we make it. And I can tell you this from my experience, we have faked it for far too long. Now being fake is being real. Some guys have never even seen women without makeup and lashes and hair. They've never even dated a woman that has unnatural hair. Because we walking around here with blonde wigs on and eyelashes that are reaching the sky. And they can't even determine if men, in other words, don't even know if they're dealing with a real woman or not.
Mm.
Let's keep it real.
Mm.
So we have got to get back to natural beauty and natural acceptance to ourselves. You can look at people like Sister, what's her name, Alicia Keys. And I love what she's doing right now. When she goes out in public now, she's not wearing makeup. She's not wearing all the different stuff. She's not putting on a whole lot of glim glam. She is being herself and totally embracing who she is. And for so long, we as women have had to keep up with the Joneses and keep up with the image of what a black woman is supposed to look like. You wasn't born with that straight or that yakky, whatever wig you got glued to your scalp. You wasn't born like that. When you came in this world, you was beautiful. I seen a baby that I know her now as a, she turned 18, and I saw her baby picture, and she got the most beautiful, curly, black hair. She was like a little Indian doll. And I was like, oh, my God, look at our baby. How beautiful we come into this world. But then we put on all of this stuff, and it overwhelms us. It complicates our lives, and it makes us lose sleep because we can't get up without our makeup. We can't go outside without putting a mask on. So, ladies, we got a lot of work. We got a lot of things. We got to embrace who we are. I ain't saying go out looking any kind of way, because just slide slippers and bonnets, that ain't it. I ain't on that either. I'm not saying you can do that either. But I'm saying the images of what we are and who we are and what we look like needs to be more embraced internally. Love thyself. Accept thyself. Now, I can say from my experience, when I came into myself, I shaved all of my hair off. I went, but I did the Angela Bassett. Okay? And I had to do that more than one time. The first time I shaved my hair, and I'm going to be brief, but I shaved my hair for my mother, because my mother had cancer. And she said, I'm just scared of what I'm going to look like when all my hair fall out, when she did her first chemo treatment. And I said, don't even worry about it. It's just hair, and I'm going to cut my hair off too, so, you know, both of us will be bald-headed together.
Oh, no, that's
okay?
Right.
And that's what I did. And when I did it, all people were like, oh, my God, are you sick? But I said, no, I shaved my head off. I shaved my hair off for my mom. Okay, so she wouldn't feel bad about losing all her hair.
Yeah.
And losing her eyebrows. And losing all the hair off her body after the first took the chemo treatment. And then when I transitioned my life, I shaved my head again, and I went completely bald. I just cut it down low, but I went all the way, and I started all over again. And I had to do this several times. Every time I reinvented my life, it started with me cutting my hair off. It started with me just being myself and taking off the makeup and the glasses and the jewelry and the glim glam. You know, I did my thing. I was a boss lady. That's my nickname. Okay? But today, I have my locks. I am embracing myself. I don't worry about buying makeup. I don't worry about lashes and hair. I was obsessed with my hair. I was the person that got my hair done, and I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. You hear my accent. I'm from the country. I got my hair done every week. Hook or crook. You did not catch me with my hair under. You know, but when I came to D.C. and I saw all these beautiful sisters with these locks, and embracing who they are and standing in their truth and being themselves as still being beautiful and sexy and all of that stuff. I was like, I'm going to finally let my hair grow, and I'm going to come into myself. So we got to do that. Let's start there. Come into yourself. Hey, look in the mirror at the real you. That's what we need to do in this day and age. Look at ourselves and internalize who we are and the essence of us being a woman. Ain't I a woman? And when you said that, sister, you, hey, I got it. I get it. I read the book. You read the books. You see the magazine. You see the girls on the street. You see the 30 inches, 48 inches of hair. And I think about all that money I spent. Okay? All the money I spent in them Korean hair stores. I was ashamed of myself.
Mm.
I couldn't. You know what I'm saying? I was ashamed. Now, I don't even think about it. I might go once a month, get a retwist or something, and I don't even worry about it. Just let my hair grow, and it's beautiful, and it's long, and it's down my back, and it's all mine. So let's do this. Let's get back to our natural beauty, you know? And when you're having a bad hair day, put on a head wrap. Wear a hat. Wear something that still accentuates your beauty, but not let the world know that I'm still a black woman. I know who I am. That's all I can tell you.
Wow. Thank you, sister. That says a lot, needless to say. Well, now, let me just do a sidebar, family. Again, this is not about being judgmental. It's about really discussing some issues that a lot of people talk behind closed doors often, and we really don't have intelligent, holistic kinds of dialogues about these types of things. And if we need to now, because you're seeing more and more of our young girls just duplicate or imitate other people, other women. And we've come to the conclusion that a part of that is because black women are not representing in a manner other than what, you know, most are seeing to the degree that it needs to be. So I'm not saying that black women aren't doing it. As Sister Janae just mentioned, there are many black women that are wearing locks and braids, you know, that are a little more in sync to, you know, our tradition. So let me also say that. So we're not saying that all this or that is bad. What we're saying is that there's a time for everything, and we're also asking the question, what is the real purpose? In other words, sure, if you look at ancient Kemet and other traditions of our women, they often wore different types of things on their face, on their lips, or whatever as a part of the culture. But can we honestly say that in the U.S., that women are utilizing certain things because they really think it's a part of our culture? Or is it, in fact, because they really feel more comfortable in trying to look more like white women? Now, again, I'm not saying that sisters shouldn't use highlights or accentuate certain aspects of their being, because we've always done that. So we're not saying, no, we shouldn't look glamorous or whatever to some degree, if you want to call it that. But the question still has to be, is what we're seeing really based on, you know, we really are, you know, striving to advance or bring forward our naturalness, and we're just adding a little this or that or whatever? Are we really most, that is, trying to duplicate black white women and so again, or other women? And so again, we have to begin to be a little more honest about this, because again, the hair that we're now seeing, unlike before, there was weaves, but there was a lot of braids, right? There was a lot of braids, so it was kind of trying to stay a little more in the flow of our women from a traditional standpoint. But now we're seeing something else. And you can't even tell now. They didn't got so good at it. You can't even tell that stuff ain't fake. I mean, you know it is, but you used to be able to, like, know right away almost. But we're going to take it to another level. not just a level of self-esteem or the lack thereof. What about the health dangers? So as Sister Janae mentioned, well, you know, this is what we need to do as black women to become more acclimated to our own beauty or whatever. The question has to be, how does that happen? How are we going to get more women, our women, to embrace our culture, our traditions, our beauty? So if we don't come up with plans of action for that, then we'll continue to have these conversations. So at some point tonight, we're going to interject how we plan to approach it in the future. Well, actually right now, in addressing, well, do you really think that straightening your hair is the best thing for your health? Not just your, you know, self-esteem or whatever, but your health. So we're going to look at that. We're going to look at some of the makeup that's being used. What's in that? What's in the glue that's being used in your head and even on your eyelashes or your eyes? So again, without necessarily going into what we think is or should be, let's examine with some of the medical stuff is starting to share with us or show us in terms of how your choices today can affect tomorrow. Not only affect, but infect tomorrow, because chemical hair relaxers are now being linked to ovarian cancer. And ovarian cancer fibroids is putting folks in the position to have certain removal, their fallopian tubes and so forth removed. So therefore you can't have any children. So we have to now begin to look at this other than in the context of, well, you know, I think it's my opinion that, you know, you're trying to be a white girl or, you know, you're trying to be someone else. That's one part of the discussion. But the other part of the discussion is, how is that affecting you as that person, your body? So we're going to now go into that realm. And again, brothers, you all have wives, mothers, daughters, nieces, etc. So this conversation is also connected to you, because a lot of times our women are doing some of these things because they think the brothers like it. It's appealing to the brothers. So that's all another conversation. So let's go back to our line, and we're going to open up caller. You are at 9-8. We're talking about our sisters, particularly as it pertains to what do we now need to do to be again, to get greater balance, get back on track, and bring things forward as black women know we can and must, but haven't. So let's go to caller. You are at 4298. 4298, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Thank you. My name is Robert Andrew Moses. I'm in the struggle for scientific socialism. And so, you know, as to culture workers, I appreciate culture workers, but I'm in politics and command, and that politics determines economics, always has and always will. Therefore, I believe women hold up half the sky. I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment. I believe in not reversing correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. And I think that politics is a critical need for women to be involved in, and certainly, health is our critical wealth. So doing anything that's not healthy for you is definitely off limits. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, my brother. You did answer at least a part of the question, so I'll go with that for now. But again, it's important that we have these conversations and that they're candid, intelligent, and for the most part, we can bring the receipts, meaning a lot of what is being said, we can provide you with the information, evidence, et cetera, research, and so forth. there are lawsuits that are now being filed. And we have to understand that what has happened to our people in particular, our women, when it comes to this issue of hair, and in this case particularly the chemical relaxers, this was something that a lot of our women got introduced to as young girls. We're talking about like 5, 6, 7 years of age. They were getting their hair relaxed. And then, of course, continued that process over the years. Now, again, we're going to examine this closer next week. But I want to put that out there to you because I want people to really think about that. This is something that is generational and that is proven. It's almost like smoking cigarettes. But they knew that this was dangerous and didn't provide the information. So technically, it's kind of a form of genocide because these particular hair relaxers were specifically for Black women and girls. So I'm going to open up the mic again, and let's see if there's another comment or thought about any of that. You can press 1, or you can unmute yourself if you're on Zoom. You all are not very talkative tonight. You're trying to make me use my voice, which, of course, is still a little sensitive, but it's okay.
I'm here.
All right.
So, we've been talking all day, so yes. Definitely, I think the health issues that came about with the chemicals and everything, that did it for me. I had a friend that was a beautician in Atlanta, and she had fibroids. Really bad, so bad that they were growing. They was almost growing to the size of a basketball. And I'm like, well, how do you get fibroids? Where they come from? And she was like, well, you know, all these years of dealing with these chemicals and mixing hair, and she's a master stylist. And she told me it was from the chemicals. That's what they told her. And I said, well, I ain't never putting this stuff back in my hair no more. That was the last time I had perm. And was, oh my goodness, it had to be about 2006, 2007 or 2008. I'd never find my hair again because she suffered tremendously with those fibroid tumors from those chemicals. And then I watched that Chris Rock did that thing about hair.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, his documentary when the mortician said that Black women need to stop perming their hair. When they do an autopsy on you and they pull your scalp back, you can see green blood that would be up under the hair from them perming it. And I always, every time I got a perm, it always burned me. It always burned my scalp, and I didn't have no edges. Like they doing these baby dolls, fake edges and stuff like that. I didn't have nothing. I was completely bald at one point. Like, not by choice. It was just falling out because I kept putting them perms in my hair. And my hair is real curly and fine. I got fine roots, not coarse hair. I didn't even really need a perm is what I found out. But we come up in this, I got to have a perm, but my hair to lay down and be slick. And like I told you, I was a glamour girl in Atlanta. That was my thing. So I stopped perming my hair after that. I stopped putting the weeds in the wigs in my hair after seeing that documentary and seeing how what my friend girl went through. My sister Bina, shout out to Bina Boykin down in Mississippi now. But she's a master stylist, and that did it for me. So we really got to educate our women on what they're putting in their hair. You know, I look at that stuff now, I don't even go down the perm aisle. I don't need that. don't need that, don't want that. That's probably why we suffer from all the immune deficiencies and stuff that we can't figure out. You wasn't born sick, so how did you get sick? What you do? What did it, you know? How did it happen? And then when you add it up, you see all the stuff we're putting on ourselves. The lotion has chemicals and hormones in it. Oils and stuff that's not natural oils. That chemicals mixed in them to make them smell last longer and have fragrance and things like that. I have severely skin issues from scent and things of that nature. And it's all because of stuff that I was voluntarily doing just to be beautiful. What I thought was beautiful, what I thought was attractive, you know, and to be accepted. That's basically what he was looking for. That was so cute. All right. So, definitely, we got to educate our young girls and women to embrace who they are and their natural beauty. I mean, there's just so many examples I can think of right now in my past. Like I tell you, I stayed, and the beauty shop was my only escape from the kids and the husband and all that stuff. I went there to be around other women and talk and things like that.
Right, right.
I had to just back off of it and,
right.
You know, embrace who I was. So thank you. Yeah, we definitely need to teach our daughters to embrace themselves. And I love the fact that my 18-year-old, she wears her hair naturally. She'll wear her afro and she'll wear her hair loose. And so she has really pretty fine hair too. But this younger generation, I see more and more of them with afros and natural hair and puffballs with their own hair and not doing all of that stuff, you know? But we need to let them know. But they still do the coloring and all that dye and stuff like that. That's fine. We've been doing that for years. For centuries, they still do it in Africa. So we just have to embrace who we are and really educate each other on these chemicals and find out what you're putting on your head. But don't want to go through cancer. Don't want to go through all of these things that I've seen people suffering from just to be cute. It's not cute. Now we can be sitting in a hospital on chemotherapy. And you see those people with bald heads that don't have no hair. They can't grow their hair back, and they have to wear a wig. You know? So just think about that, ladies.
Ashe.
First, we are.
Ashe. So with that said, Sister Janae, again, we know what it is that we need to do. We understand to a great extent what has actually happened to get us into this situation. And so the question has to be, what are Black women going to do that is going to shift this paradigm, that is going to get these messages, our messages, across to them? We have to come up with ideas and possibilities. So these are some of the things we're going to be sharing more this week in terms of what we've come up with to begin to do it. Again, if we only talk about what the problem is, and not talk about this is what we're going to do about it. And family, listen, we want you all to jump in, because your ideas, suggestions, and so forth is very, very important. None of us know it all. We're not all trying to know it all. And so if you have something to share or to bring into the conversation, by all means, do so. We're talking about being proactive. And so that means coming up with things that we literally can do. For example, here in Philadelphia, we used to have something called the Braiders Guild. Well, the sister passed away several years ago that put that together, and then, you know, it dissipated, fell apart. Now it doesn't exist. Well, we're going to revitalize it and take it and have just chapters in every city. This way, the art and tradition of hair braiding becomes a mainstay in our community where classes can be given, the young girls can learn it, and it's not forced on anyone, but at the same time, it's presented in the context of a part of our culture, and we can create competition, for lack of a better word. Because for those who know about hair braiding or corn rolling or whichever you want to call it, some of the designs is out of this world. I mean, the creativity that you see in some of those designs is just unbelievable. So to have friendly competition with one another not only helps to break this mentality in a very intelligent, gentle kind of manner, it helps us to address this issue to a greater extent, because we believe that younger girls and younger mothers will be more apt to braid their children, their daughters' hair if they really see the beauty and the culture of it in our communities. So again, we've got to ask ourselves as Black women, what are we doing in our communities that exemplify the examples of what we're talking about? Where's the rites of passages in our communities for young girls? Other than the Girls Club, what's the other one? The Girl Scouts, that's what it is, the Girl Scouts. There's a couple other ones out there, Big Brother, Big Sister. These are all groups that were formed basically, if I remember correctly, from white folks utilizing a philosophy and an ideology that represents them. And so again, where are our whatevers? So this is some of what MWM has done. We have something called Little Sisters, which is a rites of passage initiative that helps our daughters not only know thyself from a historical perspective, but present day. To not only give them arts and culture, but even etiquette. Most of our young girls, older ones too, by the way, if we took them to a certain restaurant, would they be able to know what to do? You see, and we're not saying, oh, we should know European customs or whatever, whatever. No, but at the same time, we shouldn't be ignorant of it either. We'll not be aware of it because we just don't know. If you choose not to do it, that's one thing, but not because you don't know. And so again, Black women, we have to begin to look at ourselves and really ask ourselves, what are we doing? What are we promoting? Are we sharing with our young daughters, in particular, the use of skincare? What are we showing them to use? Have we introduced them to the loofah? Have we introduced them to aloe vera, clay, and other things? And under me, I know there's some sisters that do it in their families. But as a collective, we always talk about collectiveness, but as a collective in our community, are we giving these young girls, young daughters, young women, the kind of information that is relevant to their advancement holistically? So again, I'm going to open up the mic and ask you all, what are your thoughts? Why do you think this is not happening? Right? Why don't we have rites of passage programs in our communities for young girls? There's a lot of programs for young brothers, but not for young girls. And why is roughly 90% of this stuff connected to the government and or corporations? Press 1 now if you have a question or comment. And if you're on Zoom, you can unmute. Again, Black women, What are we talking about doing to change what is presently going on in our communities with our women and girls? Any thoughts? Any comments? Press one now. If you're on Zoom, you feel free to open up your mic. I'm sorry, if you're on blog, press one. Feel free to open up your mic if you're on Zoom. Okay.
Well, here
again. Go ahead, this is our night. Go ahead.
But I think we need to do more as a solution. Now, we talk about hair and embracing ourselves, right? We were suggested here in Washington, D.C., on having head wrapping day party for the women and sisters here in Washington, where we're going to wrap our heads, and then we're going to learn how to wrap, and we're going to learn how to take care of our natural hair. We're actually going to have a head wrap brunch on Sunday. We already have a location here in Washington, D.C., Premier Lounge. It's in Uptown, Northwest Washington, D.C., and they've offered their space for us ladies to come and have a brunch on Sunday. We can do it every Sunday, every other Sunday if we want to. You know, just to bring the awareness to the community and to the young ladies in our community that this is, you know, you don't have to do what everybody else does. They show you something else. They show you how to take care of your natural hair. They show you how to groom yourself properly. A lot of these little girls don't know how to groom themselves.
That's right. That's right.
So we're going to have one of those days, like a spa day, where you're going to come, you're going to get a facial, you're going to get nails done naturally without the acrylic and all that stuff on it. All of those things. Holistically, we're going to do things. Facial, we're going to teach them how to make facial creams and stuff out of the refrigerator. It's going to be beautiful. I can't wait. Like, I wish I could do it tomorrow, but I got to plan a little bit.
Yes,
Okay, I'm like, thanks tomorrow, son. Yes, no, we can't do it that quick. But we will have those things available here in Washington, D.C., and I would love to see sisters that are doing it already and embracing it. Come on board with the Million Women World March and Universal Movement. But this is a movement that we're doing. Not saying nobody ain't doing it already. We're saying come and do it with us. Show us what you got. Show us how you do it. Let's teach these young people how to do it. So I'm thinking about inviting some girls from the group home.
Yes.
In D.C.
Yes.
That need support, emotionally support.
Yes.
As well as cosmetic support and beauty. So a day of head wrapping and brunch.
Yes.
Lovely brunch, fish and grits. Y'all know I have to do stuff with food in D.C. You got to feed the people too now. So the guys at the Premier Lounge, which is at, can I give them a shout out?
Sure.
Okay, it's at Premier Lounge at 7307 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. That is where we will be on Sundays, having our head wrap and our brunch and embracing holistic health care. Holistic ways of grooming ourselves and taking care of ourselves, but naturally, because these chemic kills, they are chemic kills. These chemicals are killing us. We have got to wean ourselves off this oppressive way of not being who they are. We got to embrace who we are. Okay?
Ashe. And they're talking about, we're not saying that, you know, sisters shouldn't, you know, beautify themselves or accentuate. I like the word accentuate the already natural beauty. But what we are saying is, what are some of the things that we're utilizing to do that? And also, what are some of the real reasons, you see? And again, we're talking about healing in some aspects. And so to do that, we have to also kind of be true to thyself. Know thyself and also be true to thyself. Let's go to caller. You're at 1559. We're going to open up your mic. Welcome to this segment of New Day. We welcome your view, response, etc. Your mic is open, 1559.
Good evening, Sandy. This is Sister Keisha of Thorough Black Talk World Review.
Hey, Sister Keisha!
Hey,
sister.
Feeling good, moving and shaking as I usually do. But I had to come and tell you because I heard the introduction. I'm listening on my route coming home, but I hear the introduction of you talking about, you know, changing the information as far as MWM is concerned on sites like Wikipedia and others. Well, tonight, I happened to meet a young sister by the name of Erin Reddick out of the state of Washington, who has developed or in the process of developing AI, ChatGPT for black people. So the name of the app will be ChatBlackGPT. Now, she was formerly employed with companies like Google, Facebook, which is now Meta, and things like that, Amazon and the like. But she and her partner, another black sister, have come up with a way to gather data for AI, but correcting wrong history. Not only is she doing that, but she will be meeting with various senators tomorrow, she and her partner, to make sure that not only do they attain data, but that the data that they do attain, that the people they get it from are paid royalties each time ChatGPT is used and their information comes up. So say, for example, if I'm in high school and I'm writing a paper about Million Women March, you're going to see a whole lot of stuff that has nothing to do with Dr. Fillet and MWM movement. So what she wants to do, and we will find more, I will find out more information from her after her meeting with these senators, to interview and gather all of the data that Dr. Fillet has on MWM. That means everything in Dr. Fillet's catalog. If she can attain that data, not just for researchers or people using ChatGPT, which is used for just about everything right now. If you're not up on AI, I don't think you understand what we're talking about here and the power of data. But to make sure that Dr. Fillet or MWM is continuously being paid royalties. So say if I'm writing a paper and I need information on, and I tell AI, you know, write a paragraph about the Million Woman March. So all of that data will funnel through, and each paper that's written about MWM, Dr. Fillet and MWM gets royalties for. So this is huge in black tech and AI. So I was fortunate enough to meet with her this evening, she and her partner, at a very small meeting in a room with about 10 people. But the 10 people in that room were very, very powerful, especially as far as tech and is concerned. So anyway, I say all that to say when she is ready, even if you wrote a book, let's say you wrote a book about the history of black people in New York City, authors to be paid royalties, all of this, because right now AI is gathering data. Excuse me, and people are using this data, but the authors and originators are not being paid for it. So technically, there's companies like ChatTap and all of these other different tech companies are really stealing data. And so tomorrow, this week, as a matter of fact, her meeting with these senators is to prevent these things from happening. And she's got into this business. She left the work she did with Google with Meta, with Amazon, because of the racism that is involved in black tech. And she realized she herself was ignorant as far as black history is concerned. And so now these sisters, are trying to change the game as far as AI and ChatGPT is concerned. So this is huge. So as I get more information from her, of course, I will connect, you know, Dr. Fillet and her when they are ready to do that, because it's about time that not only MWM and others' stories are told and told correctly, but that these originators are paid for their legacy. So this is huge. So I'm looking forward to speaking with her again after her meeting with various senators, and find out what took place. And, of course, I will keep you guys updated as, you know, as I get updated on information. But I'm telling you, this is monumental to have two black women take the helm of ChatGPT as far as black history is concerned. This is huge. So I'm looking forward to it. I heard some great things out of that meeting. And like I said, as I get more information, I will pass it on to you and your audience, you know, so that everybody is abreast of what's happening. I would employ, as I often do, for a lot of our olders and elders to really embrace technology, because if you don't, it's over. It's awesome. And I watch so many of our elders who are inept in technology. They can't even function how to use their phones properly. And this is bad. You are like light years behind the world. And AI is moving so quickly and so rapidly. You have young brothers who I met who are developing chips that must be used in everything has to do with AI and tech. So, you know, these are avenues that we have to get involved in and know more about. So pretty soon I will be interviewing this sister on my platform when she's ready. But, of course, we're going to wait to see what happens out of these meetings, because I want our people to get this information firsthand and direct from the developers themselves. So this is huge. So be on the lookout.
Wow. That's incredible, Sister Keisha. Wow. I mean, you always be bringing some serious stuff anyway. For those who do not know, when we talk about research and analytical or in-depth analysis and so forth, Sister Keisha is definitely one of our key people to do that. And, you know, Sister Keisha, I'll be sending you different stuff that I'll be knowing you'd be interested in, and vice versa.
Yes.
It's wonderful to be able to do that with someone, because both of us do
a
lot.
We have our own intelligence network going.
Yes, honey. We have stuff going on, family, that we, you know, it's things that we know that a lot of people either won't talk about or are not interested in for whatever reason. And it's just good to be able to have that kind of outreach with someone who gets it, right? And particularly when we're talking about country music, now that's one of our LOL areas.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
But Sister Keisha, why have you, I want to ask you about, I mean, is it me, or are we starting to see, like, some very interesting kind of murders or other kinds of things that's happening in New York? I mean, it's always that. Don't get me wrong. But it just, I don't know. It's something is a little different. And I just want to know, are you, because you definitely be, like, checking this stuff out. Am I, like, just hallucinating and just thinking, well, you know, it's just the sign of the times or whatever? But are we seeing, like, some different things? For example, I got wind of one of the so-called migrants that was arrested and went to court or whatever. The charges was dismissed against the cop.
Listen, what's happening I'm going to try to discuss this a little bit more in depth on our program Thursday coming, but with the migrant influx in various cities, this is a part of the great replacement migration. You have developers and economists who are talking about the future economy of various cities. And so what they have done, these economies are on the decline. And if they don't influx of citizenship, they will lose congressional seats, Senate seats, and the economy will definitely be in the red. And I'm talking about places like New York, Boston, Chicago, things like that. And so when you look at all of what's behind the scenes, you kind of understand why these various migrants were sent to specific cities. It all has to do with population growth. And these are things that aren't discussed. But when you read financial publications like Crain's or the Wall Street Journal, they lay out this influx of migrants very plainly for their readers. What's happening is the influx brings with it a criminal element, that is embedded for various reasons. And the crime rate have gone up in these cities when before the influx, these crime rates were beginning to go downward. Now, you have to ask yourself, if crime continues to go down, there is no need for various government offices. You have a hiring freeze on police and various entities like that, and they don't want that to stop. Now, here in Midtown Manhattan in New York City, when I tell you that there is criminality on a daily basis, I'm not exaggerating. I have to be in the city at least three days out of the week. I'm in the city. Every day, something is happening in Midtown. I witnessed what you would call a migrant walking the streets with his penis hanging out. And I went up to the police officers, just walking with his penis hanging out. I have video of it. I showed it to the police officer, pointed to the guy, and the police officer said, what do you want me to do about it? I said, indecent exposure. He got his penis hanging out here. Now, prior to that, I have two friends who were groped in that area just going to work or to the store who were groped. You see robberies that take place. They are walking into stores and loading up shopping bags and just walking out. But we are catching the brunt of the police assaults that are amped up now. We are catching the brunt of all of these recent hangings that you are seeing going on around the country. In the past 3 weeks, there have been 4 hangings of black men in different states. Georgia is one of them. Florida is another one. One here in New York in, Monroe, New York, I believe it is. But these things are happening, and no one is talking about it. Just 2 weeks ago, you had a Unite the Right rally in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, remember, Dr. Fillet, I told you that I went to Nashville last summer, and I had a conversation with a Klansman.
Right.
So I knew what was coming. I informed the public of what that conversation was and what was coming. But no one is really understanding the position that we are in. You have all of these black mayors, black senators, all of these black city council persons, black DAs, black attorney general, like here in New York, then in Georgia, right? You got these two black women who were trying to take down the Trump administration. not realizing that black women in everyday life are going to catch the brunt of it. Just yesterday, it is reported that so many blacks in the corporate world are being fired. Fired. Just if you Google right now, Florida just got rid of its diversity program. So all of those black women and black men have been fired, just terminated. So you're going to see a lot more firings that are happening because not only is white aggression up front and in your face, but it's also behind the scenes. You're seeing now black judges who are being assaulted by their fellow white judges in courtrooms. These videos are going up all around on social media. So I say all that to say is that while we have so many black faces in high places, our conditions are getting worse, and they are accommodationists. Those who are in public office right now, you have the mayor here in New York City who says that he stands with Ukraine, that he is in support of now a more aggressive stance in policing towards these migrants, but we're going to catch the brunt of it. Now you have legislation in various cities who can now arrest you on site just because they think you are a migrant. And I can send you the information later on when I get settled. But this is what's happening. So all of these black people now, you're walking around, you're proud to be from the Caribbean, you're proud to be from the continent. Yeah. Now these police are going to hear those accents and just start arresting y'all on site. This is where we're at right now. So it's very important that we stay in tune with what's happening in our neighborhoods, in politics right now. Me, myself, I'm not participating. I refuse to give permission to any person that I deem unsavory for black people the power to make decisions for me. And that's what you do when you place a vote. It's time to tear down the duopoly. More and more black people are refusing to participate in the duopoly. And that's also a reason why you see this influx of migrants. They want to keep the status quo. If everyone decided not to vote for just 1 year, whether it's local or in a national election, you will destroy these parties. But we don't see it that way. We see it, and we have to choose. Why do you want to keep something that is damaging to you and your people, whether it's Democrat or Republican parties? Why do you keep engaging when it was these parties who enslaved your ancestors? It is these parties that refused to pass a hate crime bill for you, but they did it for the Asians. Kamala Harris said out of her own mouth, no, I'm not going to do something specifically for black people. That's what she said. But she did something specifically for the LGBTQ. She's done something specifically for white businesses. She's done something specifically for the Asian community. Us. It's problematic. There's no study that I've seen yet. And if I'm wrong, somebody please send me the information, and I will admit that I am wrong. But I have not seen any study with U.S. Congress or the U.S. Senate as far as it relates to giving money to Ukraine. There was no study. It was immediate. But for us, since the 1800s, they give us all kind of excuses of why they can't give reparations. Even though it's America's original debt, you have to pay your bills just like everybody else got to pay their bills. America must pay her original debt. And me personally, I believe the Democratic Party should lead the charge in giving black people reparation, because it was that party that sanctioned our enslavement. It is that party that participated in New York and Boston kidnapping clubs that took free black people and sold them into slavery. The Democratic Party took part in these things. It was the Democratic Party that advocated and printed on their very own candidate tickets. Excuse my language, no niggers should have the vote. The Democratic Party should lead that charge. And until it does so, black people should not be participating in it. We already know what the Republicans are offering us, nothing. So again, I ask you, why do you participate in a political process that, number one, captured and enslaved your ancestors, number two, continue to oppress you since you had the right to vote? You have no economic establishment or communities that they have not infiltrated and helped take over. So why, again, are we participating in the status quo? And you wonder why we're on the bottom everywhere we go. You should be on the bottom because you are endorsing your own oppression. So, again, family, the more information that I get as far as, you know, black chat GTP is concerned and AI, I will continue to bring y'all that information. I'm looking forward to some good things coming out of it. And like I said, I have direct connection with the developers themselves. So that's my two cents for the night, and I'm going to continue.
Wow. Thank you, Sister Keisha. We are so looking forward to hearing more about this work that the sisters are bringing forward. And, hey, what is the time? It's Women's History Month, so it's right on time as far as we're concerned. Thank you, my sister, and also for bringing us that clarity about that issue. Well, there's so many, of course, going on in New York as well as in other cities. Because, by the way, I forgot what other city where the migrant was captured or taken, and that too was dropped. So there's a clear imbalance going on, and that puts it mildly. But
don't forget now, in various cities, they're now joining law enforcement. So without any citizenship, they are now joining law enforcement. All of that hoopla that you heard of all of these Latinos and various groups who are pushing for a $15 or $20 minimum wage, well, now specific corporations in California no longer have to adhere to this, one being in particular Panera Bread. Panera Bread in California does not have to adhere to the $20 minimum wage. Governor Gavin Newsom made it so. And I'll send you the information on that as well later on or tomorrow morning when I get a chance.
Right now. Oh, my goodness. Again, family, as the question is always asked on our end, what are we going to do? Because some other folks, they got a plan. The enemy has not just a plan, they got several, but the bottom line is our destruction. And so, again, we have to look and ask, what are we going to do? Thank you, Sister Keisha. Tell them one more time now they can tune in to Thorough Black Talk.
Definitely. Thank you for that. You can tune in to Thorough Black Talk every Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m. on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitch. And in the future, very near future, we will have our own app, so you don't even have to use those devices. So stay tuned for Thorough Black Talk Review, and I appreciate y'all listening to my commentary. And continue to listen. Stay up.
All right. Thank you, my sister. All right. Interestingly enough, family, we're going to talk to a brother who is based in California. Oh, all right. Sorry about that. Who is based in California. And he's going to talk to us a bit about, I'm going to ask about what Sister Keisha just mentioned, but, you know, we've been talking very much about how we're going to deal with this issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. And we've been talking about that for at least 5 years, but longer than that, but really kind of, you know, consistently, aggressively for 5 years. I've gone to Chicago and had sessions, states of emergency, town hall meetings, because we had found that there were 11 black women, or, well, there might have been two that were Latino, but primarily black women who had been found in empty houses in Chicago. And these things were happening in other cities.
but it didn't seem to be like it was a big deal or a big issue. The other thing that we now know is the increase of missing and kidnapped black women. It is just unbelievable. And girls, it's unbelievable. So the question again is, what are we going to do? So fortunately, because we have been adamant, because we have been consistent, we're now able to connect with folks who get what we're talking about, and they have pieces to bring to the table to connect the black dots, all right? So without further ado, we're going to bring in Brother Mishan, and we're going to have them share with you briefly, and we're going to go more into it as we develop it because we're working on it, but we want you to hear where we're going with this because as Sister Keisha talked about an app, we too are talking about an app, but this is to make sure we're able to do better at finding our missing black women and girls. So I'm going to open up our brother's mic, and greetings to you, my brother. How are you this evening?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for inviting me today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for it. It was a last-minute kind of call, but it just, you know, I had to get this out and ready because even though we're working on it, I wanted to share with our family some of what's getting ready to happen because we're going to make some stuff happen. So, brother, I'm going to yield to you. You have the floor. You have the mic.
Thank you. My name is Marshawn Kinsey. I'm from Compton, California. I'm an economic developer, and I'm the CEO of the National Association of Juneteenth Lineage. In California, Governor Newsom, through Senator Bradford, they created a bill called the Ebony Alert. The Ebony Alert is kind of like the Amber Alert, but this is focusing on just black women 12 to 25. With the Ebony Alert, it allows people, when they go missing, to kind of send out a certain signal, like the Amber Alert, to people to know that this person is missing. Just aware, focusing on just black people. But the thing is, this is only in California. Or with this, the problem with the Ebony Alert right now is that even though it goes, it gives the permission back for us, man, that's kind of not looking for us. So what we need to do is make sure that when this Ebony Alert comes out, coming from Compton, California, working with a lot of different community units and people in the community, we're now going to prepare ourselves to get into our own private investigation workshops and classes. By training these individuals through this Amber Alert, our goal is working with the 100 million women to essentially go national with the Ebony Alert so it becomes a national program, but through this create our own personal task force that through this task force goes and starts to look for these women. We want to go open up cold cases of some of our missing, some of our kidnapped women, seeing if we can find. So we're willing to go train the different dogs, look through the private investigator, and so when these cases go up, this app would essentially be able to come on the app, and with this app, we'll be able to see the different ages and the different people who've been kidnapped. Now, with the AI technology, we can now look at some of these individuals and see what they look like if she was kidnapped at 10 years old, kidnapped at 15, what she looked like at 20, and different various aspects, the different hair, she had braids and this, so we can start looking for some of our missing women and make this really a national campaign that could potentially go international as we begin to look at the missing children that come in Africa and things of this nature. But we want to let people know that our women now, when you come attack them, when you come kidnapping, they're going to be people looking from you. They're not part of 911 system. They're kind of from the Ebony black community, and sometimes we don't call 911 when we find people or we get things done. But we want to make people just not think that it's okay to keep touching our women, coming after our women, and doing certain things because now we have a task force in place. And so this is what we love to do with the march and be able to continue the Ebony Alert, take it national, and really assist our women in a positive way. Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, family, as you can hear, see again, we talk about the issues, we talk about problems, we talk about from whence it comes and how it's affecting our people and all of that, and we're going to continue to talk about that. However, it is our intention to also now bring about some action. This will be the first time that on a national level, now again, it is being implemented in California now. The governor there has in fact put in place the law, but I was really proud and impressed to hear that it was a black man that really drafted the initial legislation. So I was really happy when Brother Marshawn told me about this. I was like, this is the way we're going to go with it, because I had already talked with Dr. Truth about and this was before I knew that this brother was involved, I said, we need to schedule a meeting with the governor, because since it's already happening there, it, you know, from a political standpoint and a strategic standpoint, it would be a lot more ready. In other words, we could expedite this a lot easier by it already being there in California. So I had already talked to Dr. Truth about establishing a meeting with the governor to see if, in fact, there was a, well, we're going to do it anyway, by the way. Let's be real clear about that. But again, you know, if there's some way we could work it out and collaborate, you know, we're cool with that. So when my brother said, it's a black man who brought this legislation, this idea to the governor, I was like, oh, well, that's that. We're going to meet with the senator first, the black man first, and then we will have him to then, he and Brother Marsha, to then, you know, establish the next steps for the most part, you see, because we want to make sure that our men are as involved in what we're doing in certain areas in particular. And given the fact this is already there, there's already a black man who has already made that step, there's no way that we would try to jump out in front consulting with him or working with him, et cetera. So that's what you're hearing right now. We can't go into a lot of details right now because we're still mapping some things out, but I wanted to at least give you a general idea of how we're getting ready to bring this movement forward. As Sister Janae just said, this is a movement. Yes, we will assemble in the context of a mass assembly slash march. However, it is to launch actual programs, actual initiatives in the U.S. and throughout the diaspora. So, Brother Marshall, I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Now, one quick question. I don't know if you heard Sister Keisha earlier asking or mentioning something about, I think it was the wage there. Is there some information you want to shed with us on that?
Yes, it is kind of tearing it up. You know, when you get this wage gap in there, you know, the thing that they do is they really put the immigrants first. Immigrants have already been there for the last 10 years already, the managers in these positions. So these positions that they offered up $25 an hour are not coming to us. These positions are going straight to them. You know, they only are known to really hire their people, which we should be doing. But, you know, we always open up to hiring everybody and always kumbaya, and everybody else don't play the kumbaya game. So right now, you know, everybody losing on a high level because that these people are coming in. When you talk about the AFDC from Social Security to all that, they're kicking us all out and making way for them. So it's in a system to where, you know, it is projectedly, you know, in California, we're only, when you think you only what, 7% of the population. People don't understand that part. If you Google it, we're only 7% of the population. So when you talk about our voting capabilities here, even on the state scale being 16%, you know, our voting power is not that strong when you look at we only being 7% of the population, and they kind of understanding that, and so they're going to cater to the ones that have that voting power. So we have to understand that we are only the left. We in the Indians are the left minorities now. The Asians and Latinos can no longer claim the minority throne anymore because they're not minorities anymore. And so we have to understand that as our minority position with the financial assets, we need to really financially start depending on locally having our businesses support ourselves. Our black women are the highest in education, but of course the highest in unemployment because we black men have failed to have the jobs to prepare for them to take on that weight, and the other ones won't hire them. So that's the second thing we'll be working on as we press forward, too.
Right, right. Okay. And again, to clarify, we're talking about specifically the state of California. The statistics that the brother gave is relevant to the state of California. See, this is what we're talking about. Every state, as we proceed, we want to have data, information from each state. Now, one of the things that we're working on as a part of this month's activities for MWWM is the development of a National Black Women's History Initiative for every state. Why? Because the documentation or the documenting or research or dissemination of information relevant to black women
the history, the accomplishments, the contributions. For the most part, people in those cities and in those states don't even know what that is, except for the stuff that's highlighted by the government. But other things, the first this or the whatever, most people don't have it in their city, in their state. So we're now making sure that for the future, that the history of Black women is as valuable, as viable as anyone else's history. And you have to know that, of course, yes, we have Black history for all of us. But guess what? Isn't it ironic? We have Black history departments or African history or studies departments. Isn't it ironic that colleges also have women's history departments? But guess what? Check out what they have about Black women, African women. And so we don't create a curriculum and other components. They continue to collect the money, no information or little information about us. Oh, they'll throw in Audre Lorde or what's the color purple woman, Alice Walker, or, you know, they'll throw all of that in at some point. But in terms of Black women, African women's history, nah. So again, it behooves us to develop our own curriculum, our own institution, and possibly even museum. That way, the memorabilia, the information, and so forth can be thoroughly researched, documented, preserved. You see, I learned this the hard way, because here in Philadelphia, a lot of people don't even know the Million Women March happened. And some of that is as a result of keepers in Philadelphia, because they couldn't control it or manipulate it. They wanted to isolate it and hope that it would go away. That's another discussion we'll have at another time as to why we must have our own everything. That's part of our focus and slogan, our own everything forever. It's one of our brands. And you will see that, you know, more vividly in the near future. Brother Marshawn, thank you so much for joining us. I just want to ask you one other question before you leave us. Give us a quick report, and we'll go more in depth at another time. Reparations. Give us some insight from your vantage point. What's going on?
Well, the reparations task force that the brother actually led, who actually did submit the Ebony Alert, the same brother actually was one of the guys who led the California reparations bill. They read the bill up to about $800 million, which $800 million was a little excessive for California's budget to be able to even take in that part in there. So they had submitted for some other kind of some systematic projects that logistically will work, and that's when I kind of submitted my plan in for the embassy that I kind of sent to you and talked to you about as we get ready to set that up in place. And so that's why in California we're working on that part through the diaspora and just preparing to take that part to Congress in there, because essentially what I wanted to do was essentially just give us a central bank like they have, but the Indians have a Section 17 bank is what it's called, and by giving that with our partners in Africa, we can create our own assets to kind of develop our own reparations in a sense. So we're looking to kind of achieve that part in there, because, you know, they were actually getting thrift vests from other states, California, for even bringing up reparations and talk about the reparations thing. That's why you kind of see it kind of died out in a sense, because it was really, these people are heinous now. I mean, you know, these people wouldn't even stand up for the Black National Anthem and Black History Month at the Super Bowl. So you can understand that, you know, when you start talking about this, it's just is weighing heavy on trying to get that done. So we got to get it done in a different way, under a different platform, where we can all kind of stand together and then go grab it in the way of us being united. And so that's what we're trying to achieve out here in California now through the embassy.
Wow. Okay. That's I like the various moves that are being made, particularly the ones that are, I call them out the box, you see. Meaning, when you hear things that just is so different, I really like that. I really appreciate that, because that requires a totally different thinking kind of process. So I can't wait to hear more, you know, in terms of how that is developing and so forth, which we will in another week or so. We're going to have a whole forum on just reparations, reparatory justice, et cetera. You know, again, it is so – the time is now. It's so important that we move these things forward. Tonight I played something, my brother, that talked about Henrietta Wood. I'm sorry, Mother Henrietta Wood. And it talked about the filing that she initiated in the late 1800s to obtain reparations because she had been kidnapped after being declared free. She literally filed and won. And so I'm saying this is not information that is even taught amongst the folks who deal with reparations. Because I tend to ask them these questions. There are a few others. And so as we now move forward, we're making certain that we provide what we call the kind of teach-ins, speak outs, so that the masses of our people, to a greater extent, know what we're talking about. I don't want our people to continue to be sheeple. And that's what's going on, in my opinion, with a lot of, you know, particularly reparations, political stuff too, by the way. But definitely with reparations. People are we're talking to each other, those who have an interest in it or those who know more about it or whatever, but the masses of our people. So here in Philly, and as we proceed with the Million Women World March, we'll be doing sessions as part of the organizing for the march. We'll be doing sessions in our communities that educates, provides information both verbally and in writing about this issue of reparatory justice. So I can't wait. I'm looking so forward to partnering with you and others that you are connected to when we come to Cali, because you know we're coming.
I'm excited.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have one other thing I want to share, family. Again, this is Women's History Month, and Brother Marshawn doesn't know this, but the year 2025, starting in actually either October or December, the sisters are going to vote which month as we proceed with the convention. But the year 2025 is going to be declared the year of the black girl for the U.S. One of the projects that will be coming as a part of that year, meaning in 2026, is an initiative that we call East Meets West. What this is that New York, New Jersey, Baltimore or Maryland, D.C., Delaware, those are considered East Coast states, they will organize young girls for a bus excursion cross-country heading to the West Coast, hence East Meets West. And there, meaning in California or Arizona, but we think it's going to California, there'll be a Black Girls Summit where the girls can literally address issues, have forums, but also receive guidance. They can display their talent, et cetera, et cetera. So, my brother, you've been drafted. I just wanted to say that to you.
I love it. You know, as you were sitting there talking about it, I was sitting here thinking because we were looking at an aspect because we wanted to kind of build somewhat of a young black girl kind of Statue of Liberty. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be as big as her, but we wanted to do something like that for the diaspora. So mixing this in there with those girls would be a perfect aspect to kind of have that in there, release that, and cut the thread on 25. And this little girl could represent the freedom of black women throughout the world and just that vision to kind of stand at some somewhere, pick kind of a real good country or state that we want to put that in, and really just make that kind of like our personal statue of liberty or freedom coming from your organization. So as we're setting that up, I would love to like try to work that out and just implement something
Absolutely.
Like that, because I think that's something that we can make historical.
Absolutely. And that's really part of the idea. Again, for the young girls to know that it's about them, this is their year. And so as we're building and moving into the Men and Women World March this year, we'll be preparing for the young girls to be able to begin to tell us, what do you want? What would you like to do? What would you like to see? You see? Because it won't kick off until the end of 2025, but it'll run straight through 2026, you see. And again, it's their year. It's all about them. They are going to know that they're loved, that they're appreciated, and they need to see a certain level of protection and other things. And so, again, we've got 2 years. This is why, as Sister Jane said, this is a movement. We're not talking about just having an event. We are giving you a 5-year projection of plans of action. It's actually 10, but we ain't putting all that out there yet. To let people know that we have the intention of developing, building, implementing various things nationwide and worldwide. So I'm going to go to our family on our Zoom and also our blog to see if there's any quick questions or thoughts or comments you have for our brother or anything that we've talked about. And if so, you can press 1 or you can open up your mic if you're on Zoom. Any questions or comments? Okay. All right, we got 1. All right, caller, you are at 7247 on our blog, 7247.
Hello, Sister Filet. It's Sister Dot.
Hey, Sister Dot.
Hello, family. I finally got a brand new phone and got everything straight. I am suing Boo. I'm suing Boo. I'm just going to sue him. I have so much problems out of them. I can't tell you what I've been going through the past 4 to 6 months. My mind, I'm angry. They canceled me again. I just brought 2 phones back to back, and they canceled me. Talk about, I did something. I said, I don't even know what I've done. I asked you what I've done. And you keep telling me I did something, I broke the rule or something. I said, well, what rule? Well, anyway, that's not what we're talking about. That's for another time. I love this show. Tonight is awesome. Oh, my God. I knew. I kept telling people, why are they keep putting black women in front of this Trump thing? We're the ones that's going to pay for it. They're
right.
Doing it so that black women can pay the price. You understand? And that, oh, no, that's who they are. They supposed to be doing this. They the ones that do this and do that. That's their job. I said, but that's not what's going on, and nobody is peeping it. How come I'm the only one peeping it? They sitting up there missing nothing. They go for all of this furious backlash that's getting ready to take place. And I'm sick and tired. I keep telling people, I'm sick and tired. You mean to tell me that they starting to fire all the top 500, some of the black workers. And so what we paying all this money going to school for? That got to give it back. there is a whole lot of black people getting master's degrees and doctor degrees, and when they get ready, they fire all of us. What the heck you pay all this money for these degrees for? And as soon as you get in the Fortune 500 country, jobs, and you're doing well and you're doing this, but you're also a scapegoat. So all that money went down the drain. They're buying black people like it's water. It's a pain in the freaking neck. We got to stop them from doing this to us. We got to stop it. Okay? They don't understand that they may get hit with the whirlwind. They're going to stop this. They're going to stop this. You're going to stop us from paying. You destroy all of our education from our universities to come up here and make us pay all these thousands and thousands of dollars and go in debt and everything. Then you kick us out of the Fortune 500. Then you kick us out of the job we go to school for. Well, you got to pay that back. You can't keep doing this.
That's why now being organized, because, again, unless we are organized, realistically, they do whatever they want to do. You got to remember, you from Philly, so you have to remember, 1985, they literally dropped a bomb in our community. 64 homes were displayed. Right, but the point is they did do it. See, this is why it's important that we look at what they actually do, not what they should or shouldn't do. I mean, that's a part of it. But the fact that they actually did it and got away with it.
And
so at this stage of the game, at this stage of the game, it has to be a reality of us having our own everything, because to think that they're going to do the right thing or the best thing or whatever in our best interest at this stage of the game, we have to be out of our minds to think that. So that means what else are we going to do? We have to create and develop our own. So with myself and Brother Marshawn and others, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're doing. So we're going to bring all this together. My sister, I want to make sure you come back and listen, because I want to hear about what Bruce has done. Because one of the units of MWN is something that we now have, the Consumer Protection and Awareness Group. So that's the issue that needs to go to that particular group, Consumer Protection and Awareness.
It's fine with me, whatever I need to do, but I know one thing, you know, because they need to be sued. Because I'm a tax professional, and I want to know, are you violating IRS, you know, guidelines? You shouldn't be listening to my conversation. Are you listening to my conversation? Something got to be happening, because every time I look around, if I call certain people, I'm kicked out of the phone game. And it happens if I call certain people.
That tells us clearly that they are listening. And again, we don't have our own of whatever, so that means they're going to do what they do. Who's going to stop?
Yeah, we got to get our own phones.
We got to get
our own phones. Put them out.
We got to get
our
own everything. Because it's not just getting your own phone. You got to get your own. You got to get your own satellite.
Yeah.
It's much bigger than that. We've got to look at the realities of what it is we must do, and then again come up with how we're going to do it. So family, again, that's going to be a topic for the future. I'm going to go back to our brother. Thank you, Sister Dottie. I got your new number. I'm going to definitely be contacting you.
and we are on the move.
Yes, thank you. Now, how are you coming up?
All right.
I don't know how to show.
But there you go. Okay. All right, so let's bring in our brother, Mashan, to close us out, and then we're going to hear Mumia Abu-Jamal. Needless to say, we must never forget about our political prisoners. And with that said, we are going to close out tonight with Mumia Abu-Jamal. But before we do that, Mashan, you got some closing comments for us?
I just think, you know, like the Buffalo Soldiers, we're going to press forward. You know, I'm excited about the future and what we're going to do. We've got a lot of things already finished up. And when you talk about the STEM, we have Errol Doc Holliday, who actually built the Hubble Space Station. See, they don't tell you about our unique things that we've done. So when you talk about satellites and stuff, we are going to be able to do all that. We have the people ready to go to set for that. So you're going to be excited to see what we'll be doing between now and Juneteenth.
All right. Wonderful. All right, family, we will definitely keep you updated on what's going on there in Cali. Brother Marshawn, what part of Cali are you in again?
Right now I'm in the Channel Islands, but I'm from Compton, California.
Okay, cool. All right, family, once again, we want to thank our brother for, you know, coming in, sharing with us, giving us some insight into what's getting ready to happen, by the way. And, again, we want to make sure that we close out tonight. I'm getting ready to queue up Mumia Abu-Jamal. That's going to be our final discussion or our final words for tonight. And remember, of course, the quality is not as good. Remember, Mumia is incarcerated. So you'll hear some background noises or sounds. He's recording it by telephone. So, you know, again, the acoustics is not necessarily, you know, what we would normally have. But to hear Mumia's voice is very important for us. Keep in mind that even though he sounds the way that he sounds, usually clear, sharp, poignant, Mumia right now is going through some very serious physical complications. And next week, we'll be able to give you more insight into that as we get closer to his Earth Day. He will be 70 years of age very soon. He has served over 40 years of incarceration as an innocent black man, and we are definitely going to work harder to get him freed. At any rate, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. We thank you all for tuning in tonight. Remember, our regular meeting for the Million Women World March is tomorrow at 4:30. If you have not gotten the Zoom link, please let us know. You can text or email us. We'll make sure you get it, 267-636-3802. You can text that number or email nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, 4:30 tomorrow Eastern Time. Mumia Abu-Jamal.
The politics of performance. What can be more frustrating than observing what politicians do or say? Like soap operas, we often see them giving a performance, in essence acting, and saying things that they really don't believe. This is especially so in this era of social media, and when cable channels provide access to special, isolated audiences. It may be true that we see and hear them, but in truth, they are strangers to us. They are often motivated by money, donated by those special audiences I mentioned, but more often by fear, seen with remarkable clarity by the case of former U.S. President Donald Trump and his menacing minions. Trump may not effectively get people elected, but he can drive someone out from a primary election. For fear of him, politicians bow and scrape and beg. Like peasants before their lords, they serve their political master as if their political lives depended on his favor. They offer a false yet false sounding praise of him while snickering behind his back. Rarely has performance been so servile. And as their affections are false, so too are their hatreds, which are more performances played with bare teeth. Yet, as Alexis de Tocqueville noted over almost 200 years ago, comes to political parties, their antipathy is all too real. De Tocqueville, who visited America in the 1830s, wrote as follows. The parties by which the Union is menaced do not rest upon abstract principles, but upon temporal interests. These interests, disseminated in the provinces of so vast an empire, may be said to constitute rival nations rather than parties. Alexis de Tocqueville, Democracy in America. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And family, we thank you all again. Tomorrow, we will talk about the Million Woman Party, what that is, why it is. What is kind of impact is that going to have to bring at least a million women together in October when the presidential election is in November? This is going to be interesting. We are working on a Black women's political agenda. And so with that said, we will have something to at least present. We're not just going to sit back and allow our people to be told that they should vote for people and there not be a demand. Check in tomorrow, 4:30. Talk to you then. Thank you all. Pamoja to the Shenda. Together, we shall win. Peace out.